Good evening. This is Life Rattle, the story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1240, we present a Life Rattle classic written and read by Via Barkas. On our program tonight and next week, we are having a Via Barkas Travel Story Fest. Road trips for those of us unable to take a midwinter vacation. We've not been in touch with Via since she left the sunny climes of southern Ontario for Bozeman, Montana several years ago. Our author bio for Via is rather dry and dated. Via Barkas was born in 1974 in Toronto, the elder of two daughters to Greek immigrant parents. She grew up in East York. Barkas went to the University of Toronto and graduated in paleontology in May of 1999. This bio shows so little about Via that I was driven to do some internet research to learn more about her and her recent activities and find a way to make contact. I found such incredibly diverse information that I had to include it here to give you all a bigger picture of the amazing person Via Barkas. First, they're the dinosaurs. The Hilda Mega Bone Bed, Canada's largest bone bed, discovered near the town of Hilda, Alberta, which we'll hear about in one of Via's stories. Wikipedia tells us that the Hilda Mega Bone Bed was first described in the scientific literature by David Eberth, Donald Brinkman, and Via Barkas in 2010, after more than 10 years of research. The name Via Barkas pops up all over the place when you start reading about dinosaur finds in southern Alberta. Then there are the literary finds. Via Barkas' story, Blind Spot, won the Malahat Review 2007 Creative Nonfiction Prize, and her story, The Bone, was published in the Antigonish Review, not to mention her article, A Nose for Nuisance, Safeguard Your Trail Hound, that appeared in Outside Bozeman, Southwest Montana's outdoor resource. Did I mention the marathon running? Unfortunately, I haven't yet found a way to contact Via. Hopefully I do soon and will give you an update. In tonight's story, Via takes us along the St. Lawrence River on a road trip to Halifax. There are no big events in Barkas's narratives, but she manages to make not much happening riveting and entertaining as she captures the open-ended feeling of traveling, Via Barkas style. Landscape often plays the lead in her stories. Her wealth of sensual detail places the listener close to the characters and the landscape and lets us watch the scene for ourselves. The characters she encounters on her travels are so sharply drawn, you feel them breathe. Let's listen now as Via Barkas reads her story, Drive, A Place to Rest, tonight on Life Rattle.
Drive, A Place to Rest, by Via Barkas. I open my eyes in my little yellow tent. Rain leaks through the nylon, and I lie awake in the dark as water pools around me. It has rained for 3 days. I listen to the gentle patter tap on my tent and soak the soggy leaves outside. I pull on my wool socks, my blue toque, my wet mitts. I crawl out of my tent into the rain. I cook oatmeal on my stove on a picnic table. Rain patters on the wet wood and slips from my chin, pattering in my porridge, and I eat from my pot as it rains. The sky lifts. I watch my breath fog. I sit in the rain and watch the heavy olive tent in the campsite across from mine, the pipe of a wood stove poking out through a hole in the top, and I wonder if Jacques is awake. Last night, Jacques stepped into the light of my campfire from the darkness behind me and asked to borrow a wrench. I had spoken to no one for 2 days. I offered Jacques some rice and some chickpeas, and Jacques talked about the mice with the little white feet in his tent that nibble his hair while he sleeps. Jacques said it always rains east of Rimouski in late September. I'll never see Jacques again. I pack up my wet tent, climb into the station wagon I bought 2 weeks ago in Calgary, and heave my door closed. The clap sounds through the sky. In the back of my car, my Mexican blanket spreads over a box of food, a box of camping gear, a heavy flashlight, a jug of motor oil, and a suitcase of clothes. I sit behind the wheel and rearrange my road map of Quebec, unfolding panels and recreasing folds to frame my route to Halifax. I look down at the Gaspé Peninsula, a massive tongue muscling into pale blue, and I think of my parents at home, lying in bed in their big quiet house, my dad on his back, awake, his eyes closed, my mom facing the window, asleep. I drive on Highway 132 along the south shore of the St. Lawrence River. The sun crests in the sky, and I drive all morning around the head of the peninsula, gulping coffee from my travel mug as I drive. The river runs beside me, and I watch the waves roll. I drive, and the road streaks beneath me. I slow through a small town along the Baie des Chaleurs. I have not eaten since dawn. I want coffee. Low buildings line the side of the road, and I want to see the ocean. I crane my neck and peer between the buildings, looking for the ocean, and I do not see the pickup truck stopped at the red light in front of me. I look back at the road. The back of the truck looms large, and I slam down on my brake. I close my eyes. My tires skid and squeal, and I pitch against my seatbelt. Metal crunches. I hold my eyes closed. I wait for something. I open my eyes. Clouds blur against the sky. I blink again. The clouds drift. The red light turns green. My heart thumps once. I climb out of my car. A man with a mustache and a plaid flannel jacket climbs out of the truck and strides toward me. I look at the man. I walk toward his truck. I peer at his bumper. The smooth, rounded chrome gleams, unharmed, and I breathe. I look at my car. Jagged glass shards jut from my shattered headlights, and my bumper buckles, crumpled where the truck's back hitch slammed the metal. Black oil creeps toward my shoe. The man in the plaid jacket points to my bumper. He says something in French and stares at me. I stare at my car, and my insides shrink. C'est ma faute, I say. I speak little French. I press my hand over my chest. Avez-vous arrêté le moteur? The man asks me. I walk back to my car and turn my engine off. Êtes-vous assuré? He asks. Pas sur ma voiture. Ah, c'est embêtant. I gaze at my car. Ma voiture est en mauvais état. Certainement. Dois-je appeler la police? Je crois que vous devriez. I answer the man in French. My voice sounds strange, and I wonder how I know the words. I look down at my hands and turn them over, peering at the creases across my knuckles. My body feels light, like a dried husk, fluttery fragments flaking in the wind. I think of the Gaspé Peninsula framed on my road map, a thick white tongue in a flat blue puddle, and the tongue rolls back, undulating in waves, as the muscle rolls over and swallows itself. I let my hands drop, and I feel my arms hang. I feel the wind whip through my jacket. Across the street, a black sedan slips along the curb and stops. A man with a mustache and a black bomber jacket steps out. He looks at my Ontario plates. He crouches beside my car. He touches my front bumper and says something in French. The man in the plaid jacket responds. I watch the men speak. I watch their mustaches move with their lips. The man in the black bomber jacket turns to me. Où vas-tu? He asks. Halifax? The man whistles. He sees my Mexican blanket spread over my things in the back of my car. Tu es seul? I nod. Yes, I am alone. I tell the man I want to call the police. The man pats his chest. C'est moi. I dig through my glove compartment for my car insurance and hand it to the man in the black bomber jacket. The man in the black bomber jacket removes a pen from his breast pocket and fills out a form on the hood of my car. The man in the plaid jacket shoves his hands in his pockets and kicks at the dirt. I watch the man in the plaid jacket kick at the dirt. The man in the black bomber jacket snaps the cap back on his pen. "Je peux t'emmener à la garage," he says to me. "I can take you to the garage." I hold my lips together and gaze down the road. Cars whiz by us. I nod my head. I apologize to the man in the plaid jacket for hitting his truck. I shake his hand. He says something in French, bows his head to me, and smiles as he walks back to his truck. I climb into the black sedan with the man in the black bomber jacket. "Je m'appelle Joel." Joel pulls a black leather wallet from his back pocket, flips the wallet open, slides out a business card, and scrawls his name and badge number on the back. In his wallet, I see a photograph of two smiling children, and I look up at Joel's face. Joel's face looks young. Joel circles the phone number printed on the card, hands the card to me, and we drive along the main strip of the town, leaving my car behind. Joel pulls into a gravel yard in front of an auto body shop. He leads me past a corrugated metal garage to an office where a man with a mustache sits at a desk, hands behind his head, and talks on the phone. A nameplate on the desk reads Denis Joseph. I sit in a chair outside the office beside a row of candy machines. I fish a quarter from my wallet, drop it into a machine, and twist the knob. M&Ms skittle down the ramp into my cupped palm. I stare at the bright candies against my skin. I wait for them to do something. I order their colors. I eat the green candies first because the green looks unnatural and carcinogenic. I eat the yellow candies next because the yellow reminds me of lemons bursting acid in my mouth. I eat the orange candies next because the orange hurts my eyes. Then the brown ones after that, just because. I eat the red candies last. I pluck the candies from my palm, pop them into my mouth, and one by one, I gnaw them down. A tow truck drags my broken car into the yard. Denis hangs up the phone and leans against the doorframe. "This is your car?" "Yes." I follow Denis to my car. Denis crouches in the gravel and strokes my warped fender. He stands. He frowns. He runs his hand over my hood and yanks back on the frame. My car bounces on its tires. "We have to lift it up. Look inside. You want to call someone?" I wrinkle my forehead. "No." I blink. "What town is this?" "Bas-Babillac." I gaze down the road. I want to walk. "Is there anywhere around here I can go for a coffee?" I ask. I want to walk away. Denis looks at me and frowns. Soft lines crease the ruddy skin over his cheeks, and he crosses his arms over his chest. "How old are you? 24? 23. Denis nods, and I watch his bushy mustache move up and down. "I have one daughter," Denis says, "in Montréal. She is 24. I watch Denis's eyes track across my face, and I look at his bushy eyebrows. His bushy eyebrows match his mustache. "My friend," Denis says, "she has a sub shop. I send my guy for parts. He go beside the shop. He take you." I shake my head. "I don't have a lot of money." "Go," Denis waves his hand. "Have a coffee. I call you there." I look up at Denis. Denis looks at me and waits. I press my lips into a line. I nod. A boy in a blue nylon jacket drops me off in front of the sub shop. I order a coffee from the woman behind the counter, sit at a small white table in the corner by the window, and wrap my hands around my white mug. I stare out the window. The woman behind the counter needs dough. I wait for the phone to ring. Gray clouds gather and grow dense across the sky. My coffee grows cold. 3.5 hours later, the same boy picks me up outside the sub shop and drives me back to the gravel yard, where my car sputters in front of the garage. The bumper still looks dented, but the frame looks straighter, and thin wires twisted through the radiator grill hold rusted headlights in their sockets. I walk up to my car, pat her on the hood, and feel her engine rumble. Denis sits in his office, hands behind his head, and talks on the phone. I wait outside. I slide a quarter into a candy machine and eat shiny, round, chocolate-covered peanuts from my hand. "My car is running," I say when Denis calls me in. Denis leans back in his chair. "I straightened the bumper and put in some headlight. Used part." I shrug and smile. "Okay." "The way you hit on the truck, your bumper is come in and push back on the fan. So we take out the fan. And the oil filter, it crack, so I put in a new one and fill it." Denis points a grubby finger at the bill on his desk. "Was not much." I glance at the 345.08 total. "So I can drive it?" "You can drive it." "And it'll take me all the way to Halifax?" Denis nods and pushes out his lips. "Oh yeah, I say it will." He reaches across his desk and hands me his business card. "You call me tomorrow and tell me you get there." He holds onto the card as I reach for it. "You call me," he says again. I look at Denis as a wet warmth wells behind my eyes. I press my lips together. I shake Denis' hand. "My father would be happy." My voice catches. Denis' eyes glisten. He holds his chin up. I follow Highway 132 off the Gaspé. I grip the wheel and push down on the pedal, and I feel the road fall back behind me. Rain hits my windshield. I drive toward Halifax. I will not stop. I will not call my father. Tears well in my eyes. The rain turns to sleet, the sleet turns to snow. The thick, wet snow falls fast. I drive east through New Brunswick, through trees, through the dark. My wipers sweep and squeak, back and forth across my windshield, and through the glass between the squeaks, I see my headlights glow through the dark, and snow falls through the glow. Slush carpets the highway. My tires skid across the slush. Wind pounds over the Baie des Chaleurs and drives into the side of my car as I creep along Highway 134. I hold my foot on the gas. I cannot see the yellow line through the snow. I switch on my brights. I crook my left wrist behind the lever under my steering wheel and flick the lever toward me. My brights click, on and off, and I press the lever again. I hold my brights on. My wrist aches. I ride the pain. My front defroster blasts cold air. My side windows blear with fog, but I cannot use my vents to clear them because the fan from under my hood sits, warped and broken, where Denis left it in a cardboard box on my back seat. I press my Billy Bragg tape into my tape deck, and I sing as I drive through the dark. The same songs and the same words in the same order, over and over as my wipers sweep and squeak, back and forth across my windshield. The same words, the same songs, singing and driving and sweeping and squeaking. And the tape clicks over and I sing them all again. The snow turns to rain. My car planes through puddles. 18-wheeler trucks thunder past me. Their wheels rattle on their axles and their headlights whip around the trees, sweep through the rain and bear down on me. Filthy slush thuds against my windows. My car shudders and I sing. I feel my voice through me. I cling to the sound. I accelerate up a hill, and the music from my tape slows, warps, deepens. The lights on my dash flicker and dim. I plant my foot on the gas pedal, but my car slows, my wipers stop, and my defroster dies. I tilt my wheel and coast onto the shoulder as my engine sputters and stops. Rain pelts my windshield. I twist the key. I twist the key again. I listen to the rain. I flick on my hazards. The orange lights blink, on-off, blink, click. The rain falls through the lights. I throw my door open, leap into the rain, and scramble through slush to my back hatch, fumbling for my key, and I rummage for my flashlight as rain pelts the back of my neck. I hurtle back into my seat and pull my door closed. I flick on my flashlight. Rain courses down my windshield. Ahead, the highway curves through trees. I look at my watch. I long for daylight. Headlights flash around the curve in the road. A truck rumbles toward me. The lights sweep through the trees, across my car and into my eyes, and the truck passes. The rain falls. The trees press in around me. A second truck approaches. My right arm whips up and I flick my interior lights. On off, on off. Please stop. Red taillights streak past, dwindle, and fade. My arm drops. A third truck approaches, and again I flick my lights. Brakes squeal, and the truck stops. I cannot see out through the rain. I step out of my car. A man walks out of the rain toward me. Rain spatters his glasses, and he pulls the visor of his ball cap lower over his eyes. He squints through the rain. I pull my hood over my head. Having some trouble there? My car died. It just stopped. I tried starting it, but it won't start. The man stands beside my car, and my hazards blink orange against his jeans. He peers at my front bumper. Well, your lights are flashing, so it's not the battery. Have you looked under the hood? I shake my head. I wouldn't know what to look for. Why don't you pop the hood there? I'll have a look. I pop my hood. The trucker leans over my car and pokes his hands around my engine. Hop in there and start her up. I'm going to see what happens here. I climb into my car and turn the key. I hear nothing. The trucker calls to try again. Again I turn the key. Again I hear nothing. I walk back around to the front of my car. Well, she's not rolling over. The trucker adjusts his hat. Could be you're just flooded. A lot of water on the road. You been driving a while? I nod. Where are you headed? Halifax. Well, that's a ways still. The trucker looks at my broken bumper and makeshift headlights. You know your headlights are misaligned. I frown at my headlights. Right one's aimed up in the air there. The trucker points into the trees where rain drips from dark wet leaves. He leans over my engine again, bracing his arms against the front of my car. You got a knife? I have a knife in the back of my car. The rain falls and I think of my knife. I think of my mom, of my dad. I think of nothing. I walk around to the back of my car. I bring my knife to the trucker. It's pretty dull, I say. I use it to cut apples into my oatmeal. And cheese. I hand the trucker my knife. I like a little bit of cheese after my oatmeal. Mozzarella. The trucker reaches over my engine and wedges my knife under a tangle of wires beside the battery. You got any tape? He asks. Duct tape. Bring me some of that. I bring the trucker my roll of duct tape from the back of my car. The trucker uses my knife to shave the plastic sheath from a thin copper wire. Used to work on my dad's trucks, he says. My dad had a lot of trucks. The trucker shaves more plastic, twists a clump of wire together, and winds duct tape around the clump. There, she should start now. Try her again. I sit back down in my car and twist my key. Nothing, I call. Headlights sweep around the road behind my car. A sub-utility vehicle pulls off the highway behind my blinking taillights, and a man with shaggy hair steps into the rain. The rain drowns the road behind him, draped across the dark like shining wet curtains, flattening the man's hair against his head. The man pulls the collar of his jacket up around his neck as he walks toward us. Car not running? He asks. This girl's on her way to Halifax, and her car died. The trucker moves up beside me. Now I took a look under the hood. Looks like the alternator wire burnt out. I patched it up, but she still don't start. Figure maybe the battery's near gone. The man with the SUV looks at the front of my car. He stares at my headlights and rain drips from the ends of his hair. Well, your lights ain't sitting right. My hazards blink and click, orange off, flashing through the rain beside my tilted headlights. The trucker nods and steps closer to my car. He leans one hand on the door, presses his face to the window and peers into my back hatch. You got any cables? I shake my head. I got a pack at home, says the man with the SUV. Up the road, 20 minutes. He turns to look at the highway where it curves around the trees. The highway glistens in the rain. I look up at the sky and the rain hits my face. Can go get it, says the man with the SUV. Water drips from the end of his nose. Another engine putters up the highway behind us, and a van splashes onto the shoulder behind the SUV. A young man in a dark uniform and cap steps out. Looks like a party, he calls. Car ain't working. Trying to get this young lady to Halifax, says the trucker. Car died on the shoulder. Fella here is going home to pick up a jumper pack. The man in the uniform nods at my car. You know your headlights ain't right. Rain patters on the metal of the long truck, on my broken blinking car, on the SUV, and on the van, lined up along the side of Highway 134, and in calm, bright, fleeting flashes as I stand by the side of the road and the rain falls around me and drips from my face, I imagine the rest of the world, oblivious and separate and free. The man with the SUV walks toward his vehicle. You don't have to, I say. It's no trouble. He holds out his palm, looks up at the sky, and smiles. This? He says, and shakes his head. This ain't nothing. The man climbs into his vehicle, pulls off the shoulder, and drives around the curve in the highway. The trees swallow his taillights, and his engine dies into the dark. The trucker steps past the space on the shoulder behind my car where the SUV had sat, and walks up to the van parked in the mud. He leans into the door of the van and examines the printing on the side. Commercial Vehicle Enforcement, Miramichi Detachment. The man in the uniform touches the visor of his cap. The trucker steps back, peers at the man in the uniform, and tweaks up the corner of his mouth. You ain't gonna check my rig now, are ya? Oh, not tonight, the man in the uniform chuckles. He shoves his hand in his pockets and gazes down the road. The trucker holds one hand across the back of his neck and shifts his boots across the asphalt. Rain soaks through my jacket. I pull my hood tighter around my face. The man in the uniform looks around at the trees, nods, looks back at the road, rolls back on his heels and squints at his boots. The rain falls. The man in the uniform looks up at the trucker. How long you been out here now? You on a run? The trucker looks back at his truck. Oh yeah, but it don't matter. Well, sure it matters. Roads are slick. You should go on now. The man in the uniform points his chin at me. Don't worry about her. I'll bring her in the van there. If the other fella don't show up, I'll drive her in, get her a tow in the morning. The trucker squints through the rain at his truck, then turns and squints at me. Water drips from the visor of his ball cap. I wonder if he has kids. I hold my hand out to him. Thank you. I want to say more. Thank you for stopping. The trucker looks at me from under the visor of his baseball cap. You be careful now. He clasps my hand lightly and shakes it once before he climbs into his truck, and his truck disappears around the trees. My car lights blink orange in the mud. I sit in the commercial vehicle enforcement van with a man in the uniform. The man fiddles with the knobs on the lighted dash, and warm air blows against my face. The man removes his cap. So what's the next town? I ask. Miramichi. That's where I'm from, just outside. I look out the window at the highway. The rain splashes and mists above the road. What time zone are we in? The man looks at his watch. Well, I got 12:42. The man drops his arm in his lap, looks at his cap, and flips his cap over. He flips his cap over again. He leans forward, peers at the digital numbers glowing from the clock on the dashboard, and taps his fingers against the glass. Now the clock on the van's saying 12:36, but she runs slow. I watch the rain fall, and I think of the bowl of oatmeal I ate this morning on my campsite on the Gaspé. I think of my slice of mozzarella cheese. I look at my car, sitting on the road in the rain ahead of me, and I look at the trees, and I laugh. I laugh long in a high voice as the rain falls, and my voice trails in the air and fades, and I hear the rain. I need to fix my car, I say. Is there a garage in town? Sure, there's a few. Won't be open till morning. Then I need a place to rest. The man eases back in his seat and bends one arm behind his head. Well, I tell ya, I've lived around town all my life, and before I worked this job, well, I used to drink. The man dips his chin and smiles. Oh, I still drink now, but I used to drink and go and watch the hockey game. I watch the game, then I come back to my car. I do the keys like this. The man flicks his wrist over his shoulder like he's tossing his keys into the back seat. So I can't get at 'em, eh? And I do the seat like this. He reclines his seat back. And I go to sleep. Now the cops come by, knock on the window, and say, you can't sleep here now, go on. Well, I say, let me just sleep here a bit, officer, and I'll go. Well, the cop, he says, Brian, you go on now. I say, look now, my keys are in the back there, and I'm not going in to find 'em. I'm going to sleep till I feel like getting up, and I'll go when I'm good and ready. The man chuckles and sighs. Well, it's just their job, you know. But I know all the places in Miramichi you can go and sleep. All the places. Fact. The man slaps his knee. Fact, I know just the place. He sits up and peers through the windshield. Just the place. And there's a garage round the corner. I smile. All right. Now you go in the garage in the morning and you tell Ron that Brian Bell sent you. The man holds his finger in the air. Fact, there's a pizza place across the road and a 24-hour Tim Hortons if you don't want to sleep. I sit back in my seat. I want morning to come. I want to drive my car to Halifax. The man with the SUV returns with a jumper pack. He pulls up in front of my car, clips the cables to my battery, and I turn my key. My engine rumbles. I climb out of my car and stand in the glow from my headlights while the man unhooks his cables from my battery. The man tucks his jumper back under one arm, and I shake his hand. Thank you. No problem. The rain wets our hands. The man climbs into his SUV, reverses, and disappears again around the curve in the highway. I never asked his name. I never thought to ask. I climb into my car and follow Brian's van through the rain into Miramichi. Bright street lights glow white in rows along still empty streets and shine hazy wreaths on wet asphalt. I follow Brian past dark treed streets with dark slumbering houses, past motels with bright neon signs, past narrow bridges over a wide river with lights glimmering on the other side. Brian turns past a Tim Hortons down a sloping driveway behind a brick building where an optometrist lives beside his local practice. I park my car outside the kitchen window. Inside, in a large clean kitchen, a fluorescent bulb throws soft light along a clean white counter. Brian climbs out of his van. I roll down my window and Brian leans his head in. He hands me a business card. He writes his home number on the back. I'm heading home now, he says. He squints in at me as the rain runs down the back of his jacket. Now you call if you have problems. Any time. I shake Brian's hand. Brian climbs into his van, and I watch his taillights disappear up the driveway. I spread my sleeping bag across my back seat and burrow into it, my heavy flashlight clutched against my chest. Raindrops tap on my windows, and rustling branches throw sweeping shadows across the spattered panes. I lie on my back with my sleeping bag puffed up around my face and watch my windows fog with my breath until I can no longer see outside. I crawl out of my sleeping bag and climb into my front seat. Ignoring my trembling hands, I start my car. I drive across the street to the Tim Hortons and reverse my car into a spot beside the door, in front of a window, so my car faces the road. "Can I have a tea?" I ask the girl behind the counter. "What kind of tea?" I stare at the rows of cardboard tea bag boxes lined behind the counter. "What kind of tea, ma'am?" "I don't know." The girl stares at me. "I don't like tea," I say. The girl shifts to one side and stares past my head. "Lemon tea?" I try. I carry my cup to a table by the window in front of my car and sit down in a curved plastic seat attached to the table. I sip my tea with my hands around my cup and watch the garage across the street until the sky lightens to gray and a man unlocks the door at 7:30. I drive my car across the street to the man. I tell the man Brian Bell sent me. "You know your headlights misaligned," the man says. I sit on a chair at the side of the garage and stare at green jugs of motor oil lined on a metal shelf. I try to count the jugs, but my eyes blur and I stop after the first row. The man fixes my car. I sit and stare at the floor. "Did you sleep in your car?" the man asks. "Yep," I nod. "How much do I owe you?" The man shrugs. "I don't know, $5? I take a secondary highway through Moncton. I drive through trees. I pass 3 cars. I drive to the Nova Scotia Welcome Center and reverse into a parking spot so the front of my car faces the highway. I climb out of my car, reach in past the cardboard box with my broken fan on my back seat, and snatch a tin of sardines and hot pepper sauce from the back of my car. I sit back down behind the wheel. I pull my hood over my head. I recline my seat. In the quiet inside my car, I eat my sardines. I lay the meaty slabs on my tongue, and they melt into my saliva. Pepper sauce smarts in my mouth. I close my eyes.
And that was Via Barkas reading her story, Drive, A Place to Rest. This concludes Life Rattle number 1240. My name is Laurie Callis. Arne Ackman recorded Via reading her stories. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arne Ackman. Tune in to Life Rattle next Thursday evening to hear 3 more travel stories from Via Barkas.